محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
In what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Under the guise of human rights, the UK, the US, Canada, and EU countries have applied sanctions to Iran. They've denounced the way that Iran has handled these riots without condemning the rioters and in an apparent support and encouragement for them to continue with their destructive acts. Now, Iran has been defiant in rejecting and blasting these countries, especially for their double standards when it comes to riots and protests inside of their own countries. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at whether these countries' support is due to a larger grand scheme of wanting to create instability inside the Islamic Republic with the ultimate goal of, quote, regime change. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist, joins us from Houston, Texas. Also joining us is Masoud Shajara, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, who joins us from London.
Welcome to you both.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I will start with you first, Mohsen Naqvi. Taking a look at the UK, the Iranian Foreign Ministry has summoned the British ambassador, and it has accused the UK of continually, for the UK to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. And, of course, to protest again about the new UK sanctions against Tehran. Isn't this a direct interference in another country's affairs?
You see, this is not the first time that the West has chosen to interfere in the sovereign Islamic Republic of Iran. And Rahbar, on many instances, has clearly said that they don't have an issue with the Islamic Republic. They have an issue with a sovereign Iran, an independent Iran, an Iran that is not dependent on Western policies. And these interferences can be seen, can go back to more than 60, 70 years, when the British chose to depose Reza Shah because of his inclination towards Nazi Germany. And they literally interfered within sovereign Iran and placed his own son in power in the place of his father. And then the Anglo-Persian Oil Company and the fact that the British regime, the so-called British Empire, for so many years was looting the very resource of the Iranian people. This is not something new. This has been happening for a very long time. We can see in when the democratic government of Mossadegh was also overthrown through Operation Ajax, when the likes of Churchill and Eisenhower and Dulles, who approved $1 million to topple Mossadegh's government. So this is not something new. This is what the British regime, the West in general, has been doing this for centuries over centuries now.
Sure.
The only difference now is that the world sees through them.
Master Shajar, but this is unprecedented, isn't it? When you're having in a span of a little over 60 days, I could say week in, week out, we're having countries that are just either promoting and encouraging protesters, rioters, they're inciting violence. I'm not too sure if they're watching what's really unfolding out on the streets, but they continue to go at it with the Islamic Republic. Do you think the momentum, not only has it not broken, but it has increased, is a sign that maybe whatever grand scheme they had or plan they have is facing defeat?
It's quite clear from the statements prior to this situation in Iran that the West, Britain, United States, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and their allies are committed to sort of bring one maximum pressure and then through maximum pressure do what they call it regime change, i.e. change of legitimate government of Iran. And for them, these demonstrations are opportunity which has been created and indeed been sort of encouraged. What we are really seeing is not sort of any love for freedom of speech. There is no love for the Iranians to sort of empower Iranians to sort of articulate their needs. What we are seeing is the incitement to murder, incitement to violence, which indeed both under national laws and international laws are unlawful. The reality is that we have in Britain laws that anyone encourages and incites violence, then it needs to be dealt with through the police and the due process and the courts. And indeed, if you do it in any circumstances, you get the wrath of the legal system and arrest by the police. Here we are seeing day in, day out, channels like Manoto, channels like Iran International, channels even like BBC are bringing people who inciting people to murder innocent civilian. And both here and overseas, we've got we are receiving so many complaints from ordinary people that is social media over these channels and elsewhere. Individuals are breaking British law day in, day out, and they're not being facing any consequences. We've got people who are so-called university lecturers who's actually going out and inciting murder. He's saying he himself is going to hang people in Britain and indeed over in Iran. He's saying that he's going to burn mosques in Britain and elsewhere. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's shocking. This sort of behavior is not tolerated by any standard, but they're being tolerated here because it's part and parcel of the plan.
Well, the thing is that you're having these, since you talked about the media, these are situated inside London. They're on London territory. And there's a regulatory body by the name of Ofcom that's supposed to monitor that. And based on Section 3 of its codes, crime, disorder, hatred, and abuse is a section of the code that covers material that is likely to incite crime or disorder is banned. And they either have to get issued warnings, and yet they not only are coming out with fake news, they are not, they're also interviewing terrorist organizations, but more importantly, they're inciting really violence through people, which we call rioters, that come out on the streets. Why do you think that organization, the regulatory body, is not enforcing its own rules and laws?
You see, regulatory bodies like AFCOM or FIRNA here in the U.S., for instance, they're basically set in place to serve a certain individual group of people in society. So FIRNA, for instance, is geared towards assisting the rich and the elites of the country, and organizations in Great Britain, like AFCOM, are there to be able to sell a certain narrative to society. So when it comes to Iran, or when it comes to South America, or so-called communism, for instance, it is regulatory bodies like AFCOM that pick and choose what they want to tell the world. It's essentially, it goes against the basic right to freedom within the EU, meaning you want to be able to give both sides of the stories. Has BBC ever given the side of the Islamic Republic? Whether the fact that this government was chosen, was a popular government chosen by a referendum from the populace of the country? No. Whereas they tend to promote a small minority which is confused, and a lot of them are paid agents of the West who are propagating against the popular Islamic government of Iran. So these regulatory bodies are there to serve a narrative. They are controlled by the elites of the world to be able to serve those who want to serve the Zionist regime, to be more precise.
Okay. Well, one of the things, again, there's so many untolds that are not really being reflected as much as they should, Masoud Shajar, are the number of terrorist groups that are actively coming after Iran. And they are not only functioning on the outskirts and the poorest areas, but they're also penetrating inside the country. Thank God for the intelligence ministries and our security apparatus that has been able to foil many of their acts, which involve the smuggling of weapons. Looking at the most prominent ones, of course, the MKO terrorist cult were responsible for the death of 17,000, probably more Iranians at this point, or PJAC or Kamala, or we have Daesh terrorist group, which obviously was responsible for that Shah Charak massacre, in a sense, where you had about 13 people to have been killed. When you have these terrorist organizations assaulting Iran, why do you think this aspect of it is not being shown by either media or print or online accounts?
Look, West, under the leadership of United States, have admitted through many of his representative, including Mrs. Clinton, that they set up terrorist organization to do their dirty work, and then they got out of hand. So the fact that terrorist organization have been used for operation is a record, is on the record. When we look at groups like MKO, and we see that, you know, they have murdered American citizens, they murdered thousands and thousands of Iranian innocent civilians. And they served Saddam Hussein, killing both Iraqis, Kurds, and Iranians. Their record is very clear. And the fact of the matter is, not only they are treating them as a terrorist organization, they are protecting them. They took them out of Iraq into Albania. They built a city within the city, and they have given them power to sort of organize and implement their hatred and indeed their terrorist activities. They are agents of the West, United States, Britain, and elsewhere. When it comes to sort of looking at the difference between riots and demonstration, it's very clear. And what does Britain do in these sort of circumstances? Bradford riots, you know, the judge put a standard, and he said anyone who picked up the stone and is identified on CCTV, even if they didn't throw it, they should get 3 years in prison. If anyone is holding a monocle copter and did not throw it and dropped it, should get 8 years in prison. And they actually went through CCTV and implemented those standards. There were cases of someone who took a stone and then dropped it, never throw it, was given those sentences, equally with the monocle copter. In other riots, like the riots of London, they set up 24 hours courts to speed up and put these people who rioted through the courts. They gave them prison sentences, even those who benefit from the riots, i.e. a t-shirt which was stolen through the riots in smashing the shops and was sold to someone and they benefit, they got custodial sentences. People are still in jail in Britain right now because of that. So look, this is not about the standards. This is actually organized deliberately to create disharmony and create havoc in Iran, as they did in Libya, as they did in Syria, as they did in Afghanistan. And that is what it's all about. It's got nothing to do with the justice. It's got nothing to do with the freedom of expression. And, you know, the Iranian community, ordinary innocent Iranians, they should be extremely worried that they are being targeted and wooed in this way.
Yeah, it should be very evident. And we'd like to elaborate a little bit more about what Master Chajri there said, Mohsen Naqvi, and ask you about what the UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has said, where he said it is completely unacceptable that people were having their lives disrupted by a selfish minority who joined illegal protests. Now, he's talking about that in terms of the UK itself, where you then had the Home Secretary who met with the police chief constable to discuss tactics that were used by some environmental protest groups. So you're having the British Prime Minister talk like that about his own people, but yet when it comes to Iran, no, it can't be, you know, that can't apply to Iranians. They need to do more. They need to come out, and it's okay. Doesn't this double standard really reek of, again, the wider plan that the UK has amongst a group of countries against Iran?
You see, the West, and this can be seen all across the UK, the West. Sorry, I don't think the West has the higher moral ground on commenting on anything that's happening in a sovereign country, especially a country like Iran that has stood up against imperialism. The fact that the capital was attacked, was stormed inside the US, it was a protest, whereas all of those protesters, there are several thousand cases pending before the courts right now because every single individual is being tried who came and protested in the capital, right? And not just that, when we talk about sanctions and the role that the West has played within sovereign Iran, the one key role and the wickedness of the West has been to economically deprive Iran to instigate such protests. Right, a lot of these protesters are also extremely frustrated with the economic condition of the country, but they fail to realize that the economic state of the country, yes, there might be some mismanagement, as pointed out by Rehber, but it is also mainly due to the sanctions, the illegal sanctions that have been imposed on the Islamic Republic by the West, by the US. They went as far as sanctioning Imam Raza alayhi salatu wasalam's shrine as well, which is one's basic right. If I'm an American and if I go to Imam Raza's shrine, because Astana-e-Quds Rizvi is sanctioned, I cannot even donate a single penny within the shrine. Not just that, they've also tried to place intellectual sanctions on the Muslims by banning universities, by sanctioning universities like Al-Musfa University, by concocting fake and frivolous cases against them. Sure. So this interference goes beyond just these protests. They have a wholesome plan, which is clearly failing. It's quite clear that they have failed on the international stage.
Well, you have the U.S. also that has been very harsh, Masoud Chajri, against Iran. Well, it's been that way for quite some time. But ever since the unfortunate death of Mahsa Amini, we've seen the kind of media coverage that's been given in the through the lens of the way that you have these different channels that have portrayed Iran to, I guess, not deal with the women's aspect positively. Taking the U.S. Angle at this point, why hasn't the U.S. itself ratified the UN Women's Rights Convention? I mean, why doesn't somebody ask the U.S. that question, which then would not give it a right to come out and criticize any country when it comes to women's rights?
You're absolutely right. It goes far beyond that. I mean, United States has never been concerned about the plight of women, especially Muslim women. We saw they used that rhetoric in Afghanistan, and we saw what they did in Afghanistan, and eventually how they run away and left all these people behind. You know, if you look at how many women are being raped in U.S. military by their fellow soldiers and nothing being done about it, if you look at the level of rape in prisons, which is total controlled environment, you know, it really is pathetic. But I want to highlight one thing. You know, we talked about Britain and we talked about Mr. Sunak and Home Secretary. You know, when they're talking about stopping demonstrators, destroying people's lives, what they're really talking about, passive demonstration. They're talking about people who actually sit in the middle of the road and block the road, and they don't harm anyone. They're total passive demonstration. You know, what we are seeing in Iran, people are being encouraged to carry guns, knives, and kill people. We know how many innocent civilian and indeed security personnel have been murdered so brutally and been encouraged by their channels operating within Britain and elsewhere. Sure. So really the standard is shocking. They're talking about they should not tolerate people sitting in the middle of the street and stopping traffic. Totally passive. And then they're actually encouraging people to go and shoot their fellow citizens in Iran.
Well, there's a saying that says, Mohsen Naqvi, be careful what you preach. When we take a look at the EU specifically, we're taking a look at an unprecedented turn of events that have happened, which started with the conflict in Ukraine, where you have massive amounts of people coming out in droves, in the thousands, tens of thousands maybe, countries like Germany, the UK, and other European countries, where they are criticizing the government for their, I guess, foreign policy, and in particular the way they're dealing with the conflict in Ukraine, because they're suffering as a result of what's happening, especially given the fact that you have these governments throwing billions of whatever you want to call it, dollars, euros, pounds, or what have you, at Ukraine. So there's a problem that's brewing, and it's spilling out over in the streets. Don't you think they should worry about their own problems instead of coming out every other week and slamming Iran for its way of dealing with the rioters?
Exactly, and I'm really glad that you brought up the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Winter is coming, right? And they need to start worrying about their own issues. Not just that, the West in general need to focus internally rather than externally. They've spent too much time worrying about the world, plundering the world, looting the world. I live here in the U.S. and there's no free, free healthcare. There's no free housing over here. There's no free education in this country. The level of education is extremely poor. There is severe police brutality. The elites abuse the system here, right? And the populace within the U.S. is sick and tired of the fact that the U.S. cares too much or wants to interfere too much in what's going outside the U.S. They have billions of dollars to spend on the Zionist regime, but cannot provide homes to the homeless in California, Houston, and Chicago. After COVID, there are millions who are homeless here in the U.S., yet they don't care about them. But they have money to spend on the Ukrainian conflict. They have money to spend on the Zionist regime, billions and billions of dollars. So this clearly shows that this is not a democracy. This, to this date, is clear fascism. Fascism of the capitalist, fascism of lobbyists that control these puppets. They have these masters of puppets who are trying to control the world, but they are now miserably failing. And Ukraine is a clear example of that. Very Ukraine well. Is not equipped to fight Russia. They are not. Russia hasn't even used its full power as of yet. Winter is coming. They need to start focusing on themselves than think of Iran.
Indeed. I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for that. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist there from Houston, Texas. Masoud Shajar, a pleasure. Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Takway and the team. It's goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, following Prophet Abraham. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of following Prophet Abraham alayhi salam in the Islamic lifestyle. When we see the life of the Prophet Abraham alayhi salam, we see the wordings like La uhibbul afilin, I don't love those who fall, who go downwards. And this is a lesson from the Prophet, from the life of the Prophet Abraham for us, that we as a Muslim should not love something that has a fall. Why? Because we want to go towards the perfection. And perfection means to improve every day, to go towards the perfection, to go to the peaks of perfection. And therefore, it is climbing up every single time. It's not going down. Therefore, the Prophet Abraham has said that La uhibbul afilin, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who has created us, who is the most perfect existence, and he is wajibul wujud, he is the necessary existence in this world. And we must love him if we want to love something. We must love the most perfect thing, so that when we are loving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we are going towards the perfection. But if we start loving the non-perfect things, then obviously we will have uful, we will go down, we will fall down, we go toward downwards. You know, this world, it has uful, this world has a downfall. The people who love this world, they will just remain in this world. But in hereafter, they do not have a rise, they don't climb, they don't go towards the peaks of perfection, they don't have high ranks in that world. Therefore, we must be careful when we are loving something. Therefore, we must love the perfect, the most perfect thing in this world, which is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of following the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that the Prophet Ibrahim used to love the most perfect thing, and that's why he said, La uhibbul afilin, I don't love those who have a fall or those go downwards. Therefore, we must go towards the perfection. On the other hand, the lesson that we need to learn from the life of the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, being a Muslim in order to have a good Islamic lifestyle, is that when you love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you need to trust Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We must trust on Allah Almighty the way the Prophet Abraham alayhi salam used to trust Allah. We know that in the Quran, Allah has mentioned the story that, you know, when the Namrud, he wanted to burn Prophet Abraham alayhi salam, what he did is he gathered the wood and he ordered on the government level. Now, look at the king, that the king of a place is ordering to burn someone, and he is the god of some people. When he orders something, how many woods would be gathered? You know, people were thinking that gathering wood against Abraham at that time is a good deed. It is a thawab. It has a reward. Whereas, obviously, they were following the king. So they gathered the woods of that time or anything that can be burned, and they made a fire. And the fire was so high that no one could go next to the fire. So no one could go next to the fire. So what happened is, there is the time when they wanted to take Abraham alayhi salam towards that fire, They couldn't take it. So therefore, they brought a catapult in order to throw him into the fire. And when they throw Ibrahim alayhi salam, the Quran says that the birds came to ask that, shall we come and help you? He said, no. The angels came. They wanted to help him. He said, no. He said, the one who has created me, the one who I believe he knows that I am being thrown into the fire, so he will help me. And then Allah made that fire cold for Ibrahim alayhi salam. Kuni bardan wa salama. Be peaceful and cold upon the Ibrahim. Now, this is the belief of Ibrahim, that when he trusts Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we must also trust. There is another thing here, that in this story, it tells about a bird who had some water in his mouth, and it was flowing towards the fire. And the angels and other birds, they asked him that, why are you doing so? The bird answered that, I can just do this. This is in my, you know, capacity, that I can take some water in my mouth and put in the fire, no matter whether it's, you know, it's making this fire cold or not. I'm performing my duty. So the story gives us the lesson that if we want to have an Islamic lifestyle, we must perform our duty, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/EN.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
While the West is expanding sanctions against Moscow and Tehran over their military cooperation, the potential for developing relations between the two countries is huge, since Russia and Iran are under tough Western sanctions and therefore have little to fear.
The will of our governments is interconnected. Our high-ranking officials and our peoples do not pay attention to the shouts of the entire West and continue to strengthen their ties and interaction.
At the press conference held in Moscow, Iran's ambassador to Russia summed up the outcome of relations between Moscow and Iran in 2022. He noted that Russia's ruble is used in more than 40% of trade between the two countries, and that the Russian currency may become the main one in bilateral trade. According to his remarks, Tehran supported the idea of using the ruble as the main currency in regional unions such as the EAEU. He also referred to efforts to integrate the national payment systems MIR and Shetab as part of financial and economic cooperation between Russia and Iran. According to the Iranian envoy, Russia and Iran are seeking to reduce the dominance of certain currencies, including the dollar, in bilateral trade and economic relations. Jalali further said the automotive industry and space sector have become another field of cooperation between the two countries. In August, Russia launched remote sensing satellite Hayam into orbit on behalf of Iran.
As for our negotiations, I want to say that negotiations between our respective organizations in the field of outer space are ongoing on a regular basis.
Iran is investigating the possibility of producing cars jointly with Russia. Two leading automakers of the Islamic Republic, Saipan and Iran Hadro, took part in last summer's exhibition in Moscow and held negotiations with the Russian side. In addition to the joint production, the two countries are also discussing the possibility of sending Iranian cars to Russia. Russian and Iranian officials have time and again said that the two countries are determined to further expand bilateral cooperation. They have expressed confidence that the aim will materialize despite all the challenges the two nations might face, given the numerous capacities the two sides have. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
In a mass rally and under a sea of green flags, men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in Hamas's 35th anniversary celebration. Hamas, who was founded in 1987, won the Palestinian parliamentary elections in January 2006, but remains blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime. The movement has fought several wars against the Israeli regime since 2007. The resistance movement said that Al-Quds is at the center of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Hamas asserts today that Al-Quds is at the core of our struggle against the Israeli occupation. We're also sending a message of Palestinian unity. As we mark this day, we want to thank all Muslims and Arabs who support the Palestinian people, especially the Axis of Resistance.
People from all walks of life attending the rally called on all Palestinian factions to increase the resistance against the Israeli occupation to bring about the liberation of Al-Quds.
We will continue to support Hamas and the resistance until we liberate every inch of our land. We call on the Muslim nation to support Palestine and to support Al-Quds. People came out today to send a strong message of support to the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Hamas supporters said they want the Israelis to know that the Islamic Resistance Movement is a force to be reckoned with.
We are here today to express our support to Hamas on its anniversary and to tell the whole world that Palestinians are supporting the resistance. Hamas has a very strong military wing that continues to grow. Hamas, along with all the resistance factions, will continue to fight for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
35 years on, Hamas continues to garner support due to its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. People here say that despite years of siege and multiple wars, Hamas movement has managed to defy all odds and survive all attempts to weaken it. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Relatives, family members, and a group of activists gathered in front of the Swedish embassy in Tehran to demand the release of former Iranian judiciary official Hamid Nouri, who has been sentenced to life imprisonment by a Swedish court. The protesters condemned the politicized verdict issued against Hamid Nouri, who has been kept in solitary confinement for over 3 years.
On the one hand, by issuing a verdict against Hamid Nouri, the former Iranian official, based on accusations leveled by MKO terrorist group, Sweden has actually recognized the terrorist group and has allowed its members to live freely on its soil. On the other hand, during the legal procedure, Hamid Nouri has been deprived of his legal rights to defend himself properly in the court because he could not have access to an independent lawyer. He had no contact with his family for 8 months, and he has been under white torture.
Earlier, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian called on the new Swedish government to immediately release Hamid Nouri, saying the politicized case of Nouri and efforts by the Mujahideen Khalq organization MKO terrorist group to disrupt a legal probe into the case have seriously harmed relations between Tehran and Stockholm.
We demand that justice be done with regard to my father, because according to many lawyers, the Swedish court verdict against my father was totally politicized and has no legal ground, and there is no concrete evidence for providing the accusations against my father. Therefore, we condemn the court ruling and demand his immediate release.
Swedish authorities alleged that Hamid Nouri was involved in the execution and torture of the MKO members in 1988. He has strongly rejected the allegations.
According to Iranian officials, keeping an individual in solitary confinement for 3 years is tantamount to torture, which runs against EU Convention on Human Rights. Saman Kujurip, Tehran.
More picket lines and travel disruptions as tens of thousands of rail workers across Britain walk out. Represented by the RMT Union, for months they have been asking the government for better working conditions and an increase in their pay to match the double-digit inflation. The government says the pay rises are unaffordable and has promised tough action against the unions. The unions say they're standing firm.
This latest round of strikes will show how important our members are to the running of the country, and will send a clear message that we want a good deal on job security, pay and conditions for our people. We have been reasonable, but it is impossible to find a negotiated settlement when the dead hand of the government is presiding over and blocking a resolution in these talks.
The strikes come at a cost to the economy in terms of lost working days, and the right-wing media here have been counting that cost. Yet that doesn't seem to have dented public support for the strikers.
The cost of living has gone up, so if they need more money, then they should get a pay rise.
I can see where the rail workers are coming from. They want a pay rise. They're seeing their bills go up every month, and they want to make sure they can support their families. At the same time, the government has a really tricky job on its hands to deal with inflation.
I support the strikes and things just because I feel like in certain sectors, a lot of people deserve a pay rise anyway at the minute, especially with inflation. But us as travellers on holiday in London as such, obviously it's been a bit of an inconvenience to us.
The rail workers' walkout comes amid a cost of living crisis that's seen food and energy prices soar to 40-year highs since the start of the Ukraine war, pushing millions of Britons into poverty. Staff at the crisis-hit National Health Service will also be going on strike this week for the first time in more than 100 years. And the number of sectors joining the strike action is only growing.
We may not see a general strike in the traditional sense, but the way things are going, it is likely that the different trade unions will synchronize and coordinate their action to maximize their leverage for a better deal with the government. Saeed Pariza, London.
Another attempt to stoke division in Iran by terrorists who would stop at nothing to reach their goal of creating instability. On December 9th, officials in Sistan and Balochistan province said the body of slain Sunni cleric Molevi Abdulwahid Righi, who was kidnapped a day earlier, has been found. According to police reports, on Thursday, a number of unknown individuals took him away in a car that had no license plate.
He was a good person who always tried to help people.
He was my student. He always supported the Islamic Republic.
He was a patriotic and religious person. Iran's unity and territorial integrity was very important to him, and he even served in the Iran-Iraq War.
Days before he was kidnapped, he met a delegation representing leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in the province. Molavi Abdul Wahid Righi always emphasized on the importance of allegiance to the Islamic Republic. In the province, he was seen as a symbol of unity between Shia and Sunni Muslims.
Sistan and Baluchistan province is among the regions most affected by the recent farm-backed riots in the country. And this recent assassination is an obvious attempt to stoke division. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Every product showcased carries one same tag, Made in Iran, which is also the title of this exhibition. It's the 10th edition of the annual tech event that brings Iranian local producers under one roof in Tehran to promote their products in a range of industries, from oil and petrochemical sectors to electricity, agriculture, and health.
An equipment, I know, a quadcopter, to look for example, people or survivor under the rubble, so also we can save them.
We have showcased our 3D printer today. 3D printing can manufacture parts within hours, which speeds up the prototyping process. This allows for each stage to complete faster.
I work in Saadi Foundation. We are trying to develop a Persian language through softwares, and we're trying to make people know about Iran, the truth about Iran.
The expo is a hot marketplace for local tech products, as it gives a chance to manufacturers to trade their products here. In fact, it's a win-win deal for both customers and producers, because any product is sold with as much as 50% discount, funded by Iran's Vice Presidency for Science and Technology, with the aim of supporting domestic production.
Our equipment are considered inventions, so they are not well known. Now, this expo shines a light on our products and has so far helped us find many customers.
Since the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 deal and reimposition of sanctions on Iran in 2018, Tehran has doubled down on its efforts to wean its economy off the ups and downs of politics. While the Iranian government still pursues diplomatic channels with the West, it capitalizes more on domestic production, as it believes this will shield the economy against foreign pressures.
Local brands here say the United States measures have given domestic production a boost in Iran. As they say, the government has made a strategic shift toward an economy that's driven by Made in Iran products. Yusuf Jalali, Press TV, Tehran.
The United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan has called on the Taliban to safeguard the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls. The mission said Taliban's edicts and orders in many cases have violated or impinged on the basic rights and freedoms of the population.
The United Nations in Afghanistan is urging the de facto authorities to stop restricting the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls, because those who govern have an immense responsibility as duty bearers to every woman, man, girl, and boy.
In reaction, the Taliban deputy spokesman said the so-called Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has been committed to ensuring the rights of all Afghans. Bilal Karimi also dismissed the UN mission's stance as unreasonable.
We are committed to upholding human rights under the principles of Islamic law, but the statements published by foreigners can have two reasons. Either they're not aware of our culture and Islamic society, or they neglect our Afghan and Islamic values for political motivations. However, they literally don't care about human rights, but they have problems with Islam and implementation of Islamic orders. Such remarks by them are unjustifiable. Actually, our people did not fight invaders for decades to see Western patterns being practiced in their society.
Human rights activists say the Taliban need to be more flexible and supportive when it comes to the human rights of the Afghan people.
Of course, Afghans are Muslims and have their own culture, but the Taliban should not force people to practice religion according to their point of view. The Taliban are depriving the people of their very fundamental rights. Most of their orders on women are against the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, to which Afghanistan was a signatory.
Serious violations of the rights of women and girls by the Taliban, including the right to education, have added insult to injury caused by the U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan and their impact on the human rights situation in the country. The global community has so far refused to recognize the Taliban government in Afghanistan. Upholding human rights by the de facto administration is mentioned as one of the conditions for the recognition. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, Islam's faithful followers in Pakistan also observed the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life attended mourning ceremonies in different cities and towns across the country to pay tribute to Hazrat Fatima Zahra, who is also the wife of the first Shia Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. The morning ceremonies included reciting verses from the Holy Quran, congregational prayers, and lectures on the life and sacrifices of the daughter of Islam's last prophet. While highlighting the valuable contributions of Islam's greatest lady, religious scholars said Fatima Zahra is one of the five holy ladies in the history of the world and has a very high position in Islam.
When we say that Fatima Zahra is a role model, we do not mean that this is the only limited to a few areas of her life. This discussion is endless, and we can never stop discussing the greatness of her personality.
Fatima Zahra is a shining example not only for women, but every Muslim. She cemented the guidance and teaching which Islam brought and showed us that they are possible to implement in our daily lives.
Some mourners also gave away food to the people in need to mark the occasion. They say that helping others in need is the lesson given to all Muslims by the Prophet Muhammad and his household.
We organize ceremonies every year to pay tribute to Hazrat Fatima Zahra. Distributing food is a custom of the Prophet's household, which is to be followed by their faithful followers.
Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon are among the other Muslim countries marking the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra. While honoring her immense sacrifices and services in the path of Islam, participants in the ceremonies described Fatima Zahra as the best role model, not only for the Muslims, but for the followers of all religions. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
The EU started out as a peace project. Some lawmakers say the bloc is becoming more authoritarian. A meeting of justice ministers on Friday heard at least €300 billion worth of Russian assets inside the EU have been frozen since March.
There are 1,359 individuals and companies on our sanctions list with assets and financial resources all over the EU. We cannot let anything slip through the net.
With even more sanctions on the way for Moscow, EU officials are now using torture analogies.
Every time that there is a need, we turn the screw further.
But at what price? The EU's energy sanctions targeting Russia are strangling the bloc's economy. Rents and mortgages are rising steadily. Young people in precarious jobs are at greatest risk.
Very, very bad. Really bad. It's like everybody knows somebody that lose a job, that lose that is their people losing houses, families losing houses.
It's quite depressing for us to think that, for example, as for me, I'm studying a degree and I'm nearly certain that I'm not going to find a job when I'm done with it.
EU social affairs ministers met here in Brussels on Friday.
Many people, many households are facing difficult moments, and we should leave nobody behind.
Charities say it's already too late for many and words need to be replaced by actions. At the same time, the EU is able to send billions of euro to the Ukrainian army and government. We do not hear anything about peace negotiations. Instead, EU leaders will meet here next Thursday to agree on more funding for Ukraine's army. On the same day, the European Central Bank will announce interest rates are to go up further. Critics say that priorities are all wrong. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's military frequently carries out wide-ranging arrest campaigns across the West Bank under the pretext of searching for wanted Palestinians. Thousands of Palestinians are held in Israeli regime jails and hundreds have been imprisoned under administrative detention. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "Detention without trial defined apartheid South Africa's notorious jailing of political opponents without regard for human rights or due process, an unsavory act to intimidate and crush resistance by activists viewed as threats to white supremacy. Detention and without trial was used in response to growing militancy by the liberation movements led by ANC and PAC. Though it initially was limited to 12 days of detention without trial, it was extended to 90 days and later to 180 days. Not satisfied with the limited time, apartheid securocrats finally changed it to allow for indefinite detention without trial. While this era of abuse, torture, and death in detention ended with the dawn of democracy, the same cannot be said about the fabricated regime of Israel, where detention without trial is routinely practiced in violation of the rights of Palestinian detainees. Although the Zionist regime, the settler colonial regime in occupation of Palestine, refers it to as administrative detention in an effort to soften outrage against it, it remains as notorious as South Africa's detention without trial. Administrative detention orders are issued by the military and approved by military courts on the basis of secret evidence. Consider the irony of Israel, hailed by the US, Europe, and supporters in South Africa, subjecting Palestinians to military courts. And worse, applying Gestapo tactics by withholding evidence concealed as secret from both Palestinian detainees and their legal teams. Reminiscent of the apartheid era's 180 days, Zionist military courts issue detention orders for up to 6 months at a time. The arbitrary powers wielded by the jailers make the period renewable indefinitely. Palestinians, including minor children, spend years jailed without charge or trial under administrative detention. It is thus not uncommon to see hundreds of Palestinians going on a hunger strike to secure their freedom and raise outrage and awareness of the cruelty of arbitrary detention. Though illegal under international law, the Zionist regime continues to defy conventions with impunity. The cruelty associated with administrative detention is a form of psychological torture and collective punishment targeting Palestinian families, as detainees are unable to predict or plan their release. The current case of French Palestinian lawyer Salah Hamouri, ordered once again to administrative detention at Hamadrim prison as a political prisoner, is a damning indictment of the Zionist regime's tyranny. Hamouri is one of approximately 820 Palestinians jailed without charge or trial under administrative detention out of 4,750 total Palestinian political prisoners in the prior regime's jails.